identify how the numbers are calculated. The issue becomes what values go into those numbers, and are those values consistent with the FCC rules? Does it really make sense to build an OC-192 system and allocate that cost on today's demand, knowing that that demand in the future includes new services that are important new services but will lower the cost for every user? So we're asking the Commission to decide each of the 18 issues that I've identified in my testimony, give us the direction on how those 18 issues should be dealt with. As I have done in other states and other arbitrations, the ARLEX and ALTEL would have a brief meet and confer to decide on how the studies would be modified. Any issues could be provided back to you. The ARLEX would rerun their studies, and then rates could be established accordingly. That's the summary of my testimony.
I would pass Mr. Conwell for cross-examination.
Ms. Moore?
Thank you, Ms. Wiest. Morning, Mr. Conwell.
Good morning.
In listening to your testimony today and in reviewing the pre-filed testimony that you've submitted, it's my understanding that you've testified in a number of other states in arbitration proceedings where transport and termination rights were at issue. Testified in North Carolina, California. Is that correct?
That's correct.
You haven't testified in an arbitration proceeding in South Dakota where transport and termination rights were at issue.
I prepared testimony in a previous case here in South Dakota.
Was that arbitrated in front of this commission?
I don't know what the disposition of that case was. I believe that there was a settlement prior to the case being heard. But I that's my recollection or my understanding. All I can say for sure is that I prepared testimony.
Okay, that's fair. In regard to South Dakota, it's fair to say that South Dakota has a different geographic and population makeup than California or North Carolina, correct?
That's a fairly broad statement. In what specific instances are you referring?
Do you know what the population of South Dakota is?
Not precisely.
It's fair to say it's about 750,000, that's significantly smaller than a state like California, correct?
That would be smaller than California.
And in that regard, you spent a great deal of time talking about West River Cooperative Telephone Company. Have you ever been to Bison, South Dakota?
No, I have not been to Bison, South Dakota. I have been to small rural areas, though, in my life.
Are you familiar with the population density of Bison, South Dakota?
No, but general population density only affects, is relevant in terms of loop plans, which is not part of this arbitration.
And that's fine. I understand. I'm just curious whether you did any analysis with regard to the four companies remaining on the inter-MTA or intra-MTA recip comp rate as to population density.
Population density would not be a variable in the ARLEX cost study, so I didn't look at that.
And I understand that. So what you're indicating is that you haven't looked at any of these areas as far as population density.
No, only because it wasn't relevant
to
anything
else. And I understand that. Thank you. With regard to the four companies that are at issue, it's fair to say they're fairly rural in nature, correct?
I assume they are, yes.
And it's fair to say that it's more difficult to provide services throughout rural areas than it might be in a more densely populated urban area, such as those you previously looked at in North Carolina and California, correct?
No, I wouldn't agree with that as it relates to transport and termination.
There are different considerations that need to be taken into account when structuring a network in a more rural area than a more urban area, correct?
Well, the arbitrations that I was involved in North Carolina, and in particular in California, only involved rural telephone companies. Some of those rural telephone companies in California were in areas that were similar to or comparable to some of the areas here.
Similar to West River, which has a population of 325, or Bison, excuse me, not West River.
Yes, one of the rural companies in California was smaller than West River.
Okay, and in fact, in this particular case, there are exchanges within West River that actually have population densities of less than 100 people. Did you take into account those considerations?
Again, the population...
And I understand what you're telling me, and I appreciate the distinction with regard to the analysis that you've looked at. What I'm attempting to determine is whether you have truly looked at West River and looked at its exchanges, the square miles involved, the access lines involved, those ratios.
Yes, I did look at that.
Okay, so for example, for Camp Crook, you're aware that that covers approximately 1,440 miles, has 152 access lines, so the lines per square mile would be 0.1055. You've taken a look at all of those factors.
That piece of data, that factor, is irrelevant to the determination of transport costs.
And I understand what you're telling me, but what you're telling this commission is that you've taken into account all of those things that go into the construction of a network for West River, given these sorts of considerations.
Well, I wouldn't look at data that wasn't relevant to the determination of transport. So to the extent that I didn't look at population per square mile, it was only because it wasn't relevant to the determination of transport.
In your opinion, I understand that. Do you believe in your experience that all cost studies would result in the same rate?
No, they won't.
Okay. And in this particular case, you've done a significant amount of comparison between the companies that were originally part of this arbitration and the four that are remaining, correct?
I did do comparisons. That was one of several things that I did to analyze and test the reasonableness of the data.
Can you point to me to a specific FCC rule that indicates that the reasonableness of a flex study should be determined by comparing rates between different flex?
As it relates to Part 51?
Any FCC rule.
Well, I haven't read all the FCC rules, so I don't know that my statement will have to be limited to those that I've read.
That's fair. I can attest to you. I haven't read them all either. So we're in the same boat.
I'll give you a two-part answer. I don't know of an instance in which the rule itself says that you compare Company A to Company B. I do know that the FCC staff routinely in its analyses of costs makes comparisons of parameters across companies. It's a common practice to compare Company A to Company B to Company C, to identify what are called outliers, and then to ask further questions as to why those outliers have higher or lower costs.
Okay, I'm going to stop you there because we're talking about the FCC staff now, correct? We're not talking about this commission in an arbitration proceeding.
Well, I think that the commission would benefit from the comparison of some cost information across the companies in this proceeding to ask the question, is this a reasonable cost?
But there's no FCC rule that requires them to do that, correct?
Not in Part 51, 505, or 511, as they provide the requirements for these cost studies.
Okay, and in this particular arbitration, we're in a bit of a unique proceeding because we have a number of companies whose dockets have been consolidated, correct?
Unique relative to what?
unique relative to perhaps another arbitration proceeding where you have one singular ARLEC arbitrating with Altel?
Well, that's not correct. Most of the, with the exception of only one, I believe, subject to check, with the exception of only one arbitration I've been involved in, there were multiple ARLECs, and they were consolidated proceedings. And in one
I want to stop you there. You answered my question. Thank you. With regard to this particular commission, though, it's my understanding that what you're doing is you're taking four very different petitioners and you're asking the commission to compare those and make determinations as to what's appropriate for all of them based on a direct comparison, as opposed to simply asking this commission to determine if the FLEC model advanced by each one of these companies complies with the FCC rules.
Is that a question or a statement?
It's a question.
That's incorrect. That's not correct.
Okay. So what you're telling me is that you're not asking this commission to compare West River to Kennebec.
The only instance in which I suggested that a comparison might be made among the companies was as it related to the annual cost factors. I have not suggested that, and before I say this, there are many other factors, as you saw this morning, that feed into the cost studies. I haven't suggested that you compare the mileage of West River with the mileage of Santel to make a judgment as to whether Santel's mileage is right. I haven't asked you to compare or suggested that you compare the demand, current demand for West River with that of Santel to make a judgment as to whether each is right. The only place in which I've suggested a comparison is on the annual cost factors.
And in fact, that's why individual cost studies are developed, correct?
Individual cost studies are developed to determine the cost of individual companies.
Exactly. And so what we should be looking at here is whether each of the company's proposed FLEC study comports with the FCC rules, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you. Do you have your rebuttal testimony in front of you, Mr. Conwell?
Yes, I do.
Thank you. I'd turn your attention to page 6, lines 19 through 21.
I see it.
You had an opportunity to look at that. If I'm going to paraphrase here, so if I misstate, please correct me. But it's my understanding, based on what you're indicating there, that costs must be directly attributable to transport and terminating Altel mobile-to-land traffic. And then you cite to Rule 51-505B. Is that fair?
That's correct.
Okay. Can you point me to where in FCC Rule 51-505B it says that the cost must be directly attributable to one particular carrier, such as Altel?
Yes, it can. And
do you have a copy of the rule in front of you? I'm happy to get it to you.
B states that the total element long-run incremental cost of an element is the forward-looking cost over the long run of the total quantity of facilities and functions that are directly attributable to, and the words directly attributable to are the words that I use in my testimony on line 19, page 6.
And I understand the use of the words, and I didn't mean to try to get into an argument on semantics with you. I apologize if I wasn't clear. What I was attempting to have you identify was where it indicates that it has to be directly attributable to the costs of one company, such as Alltel.
Okay.
Because it's my understanding, or let me just ask you a better question, is it your testimony that the RLEX could only charge Alltel for portions of their switch, let's say, if that's exhausted with the addition of Alltel traffic?
I guess I don't understand your question.
Sure. What I'm trying to figure out, when I look at the FCC rules on TELRIC, and we talk about total costs, and we talk about the FCC indicating that total costs should be shared by all who want to use a network for transport and termination, I'm trying to figure out where, in this particular rule, you believe that Alltel should only have to pay for minute elements that are needed to terminate a call for it.
Okay, I'd like to help you with that if you allow me. I think you have to look at two FCC rules. The first is 51505B, which is the definition of TELRIC. And the key words there are that the costs are to include those that are directly attributable to or reasonably identifiable as incremental to such element. Directly attributable to such element. Now the question becomes, what's the element? And to get an understanding of what the element is, you have to look at the FCC's definition of, in this case, termination. It's one of the two elements, transport and termination. So if you'll turn to page 16 of my direct testimony, Confidential Exhibit 2, on line 16, you'll see that the FCC defines termination in Part 51701D as the switching of telecommunication traffic from the terminating carrier's end-office switch or equivalent facility and delivery of such traffic to the called party's premises. That defines the element. It is the switching of traffic. It is the switching of traffic for the purpose of interconnection. And so what we're interested in then would be the directly attributable costs of switching of mobile to LAN traffic. Mobile to LAN traffic is the telecommunications traffic.
Sure, and I appreciate the distinction that you're making, but what I am trying to ask is where it says that it has to be directly attributable only to Alltel.
Well, this interconnection agreement is for Alltel.
Sure, I understand that, and it's fair to state that other carriers can opt into this agreement once it's on file, correct? Under the FCC rules?
I don't think that's true in the general sense. It's my understanding, and I'm not an expert in this arbitration, in this agreement, but it's my understanding that the agreement is for transport termination, that is the interconnection agreement between these carriers. So if another carrier can opt in, it would only be for the purpose of this, or only for the element that's being offered here, which is the switching, in this case, of telecommunications traffic.
Sure, it's for so they could opt in for the purposes of the rate.
A CRA.
Correct, and the other terms that are set forth in this particular agreement.
Yes, but a
CRA. That's fair, correct?
But a CRA.
Okay, I understand, but that's just what I was looking for there.
No, I think he should be entitled to finish the answer and not be interrupted in the answer. The answer was his answer did not stray from the question when she interrupted him and tried to shut him off.
Yes, the sting.
A CRA that was interested in acquiring unbundled switching for the purpose of offering local telephone service, the UNI, which Ms. Manichek seems to confuse with interconnection, would not opt into this agreement. They would go to a UNI tariff. So I don't think there's a risk that a CLEC that wanted to acquire unbundled switching would opt into a rate that's part of this agreement. Those are two different elements.
Sure, that's fair. Let's talk about other carriers similarly situated to Alltel. those types of carriers could opt into this agreement, correct? And they could use the rate, the recip comp rate. That should have been my full question. I apologize.
It's my understanding that they could opt into the rates. If they did that, though, they would be opting into termination, and they would be opting into the transport from the interconnection point to the terminating office. I would not, for example, expect that to include the 58 miles of cable that we talked about today.
And that's fine, but what we're talking about is they would be able to use the transport and termination rate, correct?
You know, again, as to whether a company can opt into the agreement or not, that's beyond my testimony. My testimony deals with what the costs are for mobile to land traffic. I think you probably would want to talk with somebody else about who can opt and who can't opt. I think the important point, though, is that, you know, the costs that we're to compute here are those that are directly attributable to the element that's being provided, and that element is termination, which is different than unbundled switching.
Sure, and I appreciate the distinction. And I also appreciate your honesty with regard to the opt-in requirements. If I understand your testimony correctly, then, what we're talking about is that if one of these RLECs is to purchase, let's say, additional capacity in the future in order to ensure that they've got an efficient network, in order to ensure that they can handle the demand, if another carrier were to opt into this particular agreement, that RLEC then cannot recover their costs from those other carriers, correct?
I think you could only ask that question and only answer that question as it relates to a specific piece of equipment in the network. For example, if you're talking about a call agent with so much capacity that it will not exhaust over its useful life, then the additional demand that's created by a wireless carrier or another carrier, wireless carrier that presumably was able to opt into this rate, or even a residential subscriber, it doesn't matter who the customer is, whether it's another carrier or an end user, their additional demand is not going to create additional cost. And so it would be appropriate under those circumstances to consider that call agent's investment in cost as non-usage sensitive. There is no additional cost. It's consistent with the FCC Common Carrier Bureau and other state commissions that have found the same.
So in other words, what you're saying then is that we would need an individual agreement for every RLEC and every carrier, because every single time there would need to be different elements considered.
No, as a practical matter, I don't think that's necessarily the case. I would suspect that if another wireless carrier has the same or similar interconnection points and is terminating to the same or wire centers, exchanges, that those components of the network that are not usage sensitive for Altel or for a residential customer or friend would also not be usage sensitive for them, so the cost would be the same. Under that circumstance, then it wouldn't be necessary to develop another rate for those carriers.
Let me ask you this. We've talked a lot about efficient networks. We've talked a lot about capacity. If the RLEX in this particular case were to purchase a switch in very small increments, so as not to exceed their capacity, as you've mentioned, each increment would then be exhausted, would it not? They purchased it in small increments until the capacity were exhausted.
Are we talking about a hypothetical switch or an actual switch?
Hypothetical switch, general terms at this point.
If you had a component of the switch, and I think that's an important point, we're not talking about switches as though there's some sort of monolithic piece of equipment. They consist of multiple components, call agents, media gateways, and you saw the list for the Bison Exchange. If a component of that switch was purchased in what we sometimes refer to as lumps of capacity, that over their life would be exhausted. Then if additional demand comes along from whatever source and it advances that capacity addition, then that's an incremental cost. There is usage sensitivity in that case.
And Tyrek talks about building an efficient network, correct?
Yes.
And do you believe it is efficient for, say, a company that would purchase an OC48, let's say, to meet current demand, but it's something where they've actually projected they need greater than that? Do you think it's efficient for them to purchase an OC48 and then in 2 years find out that they need additional capacity and then to purchase an OC192?
We've raised a very, very important issue. I want to be clear that I'm not debating. I have nothing against OC192. It's a fine transport system. But I think the issue becomes one of selecting a system that over the long run is the most efficient, has the lowest cost. Now the important thing, though, is that when you apply Rule 51.511 and you have that cost in the numerator, that you divide it by the demand that justifies that. So you get into a tightly linked situation that if you say you need an OC192, you've got to demonstrate that you have that demand to justify it, and then you've got to divide through by that demand, resulting in a significantly lower cost than is reflected in the studies.
Sure, and I think, thank you for clarifying that to that extent, and I think you've raised another important point. I believe in your testimony earlier, you indicated, or you paraphrased some of Mr. Weber's testimony from yesterday in regard to West River, and I believe you indicated that Mr. Weber testified that West River only needed an OC48. Do you recall saying that earlier?
I don't recall saying that, but if I did say it, then I think that's... Let me be clear on what I think he did say yesterday, and to the extent that that's different than what I said earlier, then you can tell me.
And that's fine. Perhaps I'll just make my own clarification. Are you aware that West River currently has an OC-192 in place?
I think the important question is do they need an OC-192 based on today's demand?
And that's what I'd like to ask you next, because what I hear you telling this commission is that West River needs to be penalized for currently having an OC-192 in place, and that effectively this commission needs to ignore the fact that West River has an OC-192 in place and presume it should be something less, such as an OC-48. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct.
Okay. So then West River can't be presumed to have an OC-192 currently. Is that what you're telling this commission?
No, what I said was that the FCC rules are clear, and they're also, I think, very reasonable. They say that a company like West River would specify what its forward-looking or projected demand is, step one. Step two, then size the transport system to efficiently serve that demand. That may very well be an OC-192. Step three, develop the cost of that system and divide it by the total demand as of that projected time that justified the system in the first place. So if West River has an OC-192 system today and it has been efficiently sized for the long run, all I'm saying is instead of dividing through by 2% of its ultimate capacity, 152 DS1s, divide it by something that is a projected figure that reflects all of the new services that Mr. Weber talked about and that West River must be anticipating. And when you do that, then you shift the cost of that OC-192 system to the cost causer, that is, these future multimedia services that are going to be using that system.
But if I understand your testimony to this commission correctly, what you are essentially stating by saying that all costs must be directly attributable to transport and termination for Alltel is that the first person on the network essentially pays for all the charges, and no one that ever decides to use the network for transport and termination after that will share in those costs.
No, that's not correct. I'm not saying that.
So it's not your testimony then to this commission that the commission can't look at the total costs of the network for these RLECs and developing them in the transport and termination rate?
Let me see if I can clarify this, because we've probably got two issues working here in parallel. Let's go out in the future, some point in time, 3-5 years, whatever the appropriate measuring period is. At that point in time, presumably, if West River requires an OC-192 system, they will have more than 152 DS-1s in service. Let's say that at that point in time, they're at half of the capacity of an OC-192. That would be roughly 2,700 DS-1s. Altel, as well as other carriers, as well as end users, will be sharing in that demand, will be part of that demand. I'm saying that at that point in time, Altel should bear a pro rata share based on its use of its share of the total demand at that point in time. It should bear a pro rata share of that cost, just as any other user would, not special treatment. But what it shouldn't have to do is to bear the cost of that system based on its share of today's demand, because the system is justified not by today's demand but by the future demand. So that's I think that's the key point I was trying to make.
And if we look at the example then that you're trying to make, it's my understanding that what you're saying is only certain portions of West River's expenses should be attributable to Altel, and West River should have to bear the rest of those expenses itself.
No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying that FCC Rule 51.511 says that you efficiently size, in this case, an OC-192 system or some other transport system. It may be smaller, probably is smaller for some rings in this case. But you size that system, put that in the numerator, then divide it by the total demand projected at some point in time, not the present. And then Altel will pick up a pro rata share based on its proportion of that demand.
Sure.
Just as anyone else should pick up a pro rata share.
Sure, and if you size it out that way, and you only have certain elements that Altel is responsible for sharing in those costs, you shift the costs of other elements to other users, and essentially you drive down demand. Isn't that a fair statement, such that the network can't actually support itself?
Okay. In the case of transport, we haven't recommended that any components of the transport investment be set aside as not being used for transport. In the case of switching, let's take a specific one, because whenever you deal with specifics, it becomes easier to deal with the issue. The web self-care system hardware is part of the investment in every exchange and every RLAC. My understanding of the function of that system is to enable an end user, not a wireless carrier, but an end user, to go online and to do certain service order activities that otherwise would have to be done by working with a business office. That capability is not necessary, as Mr. Weber said yesterday, to terminate a wireless call. Therefore, it's not part of termination. Now the question becomes, well, who pays for that?
Sure.
And the answer to that question is the cost causer. In this case, the cost is being incurred and caused by providing end-user services. In this case, a residential service order charge might be a way of recovering part of that cost. If you include that cost in termination, you're violating 51505, which says you should not include in the rates revenues to subsidize other services. And if we included that cost, we'd be subsidizing service order charges.
And I understand your point, but in looking at Section 51505, if you look at subsection C, it deals with a reasonable allocation of forward-looking common costs. In the diagram that I believe is Altel Exhibit 10, which is confidential, and I'm not going to refer to specific numbers so we can stay on the web here, but you've removed all of the common costs from the West River switching network in that diagram, correct?
There's an aspect of your question that's incorrect, and I think we need to clear that up, if I may.
Well, what I'm asking you is whether you've removed all of the common costs from the West River switching network, as you've illustrated and told the commission about in Altel Exhibit 10.
I don't want the term common, as it's used by the RLEX related to switching, to be confused with common as it relates to the FCC rules. They are not the same thing.
And that's fine, but what I'm asking you, if you have removed all of those.
But you asked me the question after having read the rule, which said that the rules allow for common costs to be allocated. So I'm not inclined to answer your question about whether I've removed common costs or not until we define what the meaning of common is.
Okay, I'll parse out my initial question then. You've removed all of the common costs from the West River switching network, correct?
Those common costs are not the same common costs that you talked about in the FCC rule. So I don't want it to be construed that my suggestion that common costs be pulled out of switching, where the term common is not the same as in the rule, that pulling those out is inconsistent with the FCC rule. It is not inconsistent.
So it's fair to say we disagree on that point as to what constitutes common costs within the meaning of the FCC rules.
I don't think I've ever seen anywhere where switching investment was included in common costs. Common costs normally are things like executive, legal, human resources, finance, the general and administrative functions of the business. Even the RLEX cost studies don't include switching in common.
And that's fine. But I'm just asking you, that's what you've done, and it's fair to say we disagree on that point, correct?
I don't think we disagree on the definition of common. I think we disagree.
That's fine. You've answered my question. Thank you. I'd like to talk with you a little bit about the networks. You indicated that Mr. Weber had essentially taken a cookie-cutter approach, I believe, with regard to all of the RLEX in this particular case. And one of the things that you talk about in your rebuttal testimony, and I'm going to again refer you to page 27, I believe it's lines 8 and 9.
Page 27 of reply?
Rebuttal.
Okay.
Excuse me.
I'm on page 27.
And do you have a chance to read lines 8 and 9, sir?
Yes, I did.
Okay. And in that, you're talking about this integrated soft switch option, correct?
Yes.
Okay. You stated that an integrated soft switch option is a lower cost option than the distributed media gateway that Mr. Weber testified about yesterday, correct?
I said it appears to provide.
Okay. Have you ever been involved in the design and implementation of a packet switching network?
Not in the design and implementation, no.
Okay. Did you contact Metaswitch at all?
I read their website describing the integrated soft switch option.
Did you request pricing for it?
It wasn't necessary to request pricing to ask the question, is this the lowest cost configuration?
But did you request the pricing?
It's not my obligation to prove that it's a lower cost option.
I understand, but I'm just asking the question if you contacted them and requested the pricing.
I didn't contact Metaswitch.
Thank you. So if I'm to understand your testimony correctly, then, what you're telling the commission is that the integrated soft switch option is the best option, despite the fact that you've never designed the packet switch network, and despite the fact that you have never found out what the exact cost is for such a switch.
No, I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that statement.
So you don't believe that in order to determine whether a cost is the lowest cost, that you actually need to find out what that is?
What I did is I went to the MetaSwitch website, and it indicated that there was an option called the integrated soft switch option. And it indicated that for some carriers, that might be both a feasible and as well as a lower cost option. And so I raised the question, is this a lower cost option? Might some of the RLX have a more efficient network if they chose to do that? I put the question out there in my direct testimony.
But you didn't find out what the cost was.
Well, I had information from MetaSwitch that indicated the option was there, and that some RLX find that to be a more efficient, lower cost option. So it wasn't necessary for me to go to MetaSwitch and ask them to give me information to test that. I was merely saying it appears that it might be a better option.
So you're not telling this commission that it is the only option and it is the best option, because you don't have a price to give them for that option, correct?
What I'm suggesting to the commission is that 51.505 says that the RLX are responsible for proving that their rates don't exceed forward-looking economic costs, and those costs have got to be the lowest cost option.
I'd move to strike this response as non-responsive. My question was whether he'd obtained cost.
I'm not sure if that was exactly your question. Could you read back your question? Was your question before?
The last question was, so you're not telling this commission that it is the only option, it is the best option, because you don't have a price to give them for that option, correct?
And no, his response was, I'm sorry, I didn't tell you.
Answer. What I'm suggesting to the commission is that 51.505 says that the RLX are responsible for proving that their rates don't exceed forward-looking economic costs, and those costs have to be the lowest cost option. And then the objection.
Overruled.
And so, no, I'm not suggesting to the commission that the integrated soft switch option is the lowest cost. I'm suggesting that there's an obligation on the part of the RLX, given the evidence that there is such an option, to prove it. Not only to prove it, but also to offer into evidence that proof.
Sure. And that's what the rules contemplate, correct, is looking at the lowest cost option, but also at the same time looking at the most efficient network configuration, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And in this case, Mr. Weber talked yesterday about what he's used, and he believes that is, in fact, the most network, that is the most efficient network configuration at the best cost.
He did make that statement, but if we have information that suggests that there is another option available, and particularly if the manufacturer says this may be a more efficient option for small companies, then that piece of information, that evidence, suggests that Mr. Weber also might choose to demonstrate and to provide an analysis that demonstrates that that option is not lower cost.
So are you telling this commission, then, that it is incumbent upon all of these RLX to essentially bring in a checklist of each and every potential option that could potentially be available to them and rule that out?
No, I've only raised the issue, given, per my recollection, as it relates to this particular issue, that the integrated switch option. So I'm not suggesting that every combination and permutation be considered, just this one.
And you would agree that Mr. Weber testified yesterday and indicated that was the best one, correct?
I don't think he's produced record evidence that shows the basis of his analysis.
He did, however, explain that, correct?
I know that he, in his reply testimony, provides some information. I don't recall his testimony in this particular area yesterday, but I do know that Mr. Weber, either in reply or perhaps yesterday, has indicated that he looked at the integrated switch option. I just haven't seen the analysis that supports his conclusions.
So it's not your suggestion then that he's failed to look at that entirely in determining what the most efficient network configuration is for these RLECs?
I come back to the requirement of the FCC rule. It's not enough to just say it's the lowest cost. If we're looking at a significant matter, you not only can say it, but you also have to provide some evidence to support that, and I don't think we have that evidence in the record.
Are you disputing Mr. Weber's qualifications as an engineer to build a network?
No, I'm trying to adhere to the FCC rule.
As are we.
Ms. Moore, it's a 11:45, and I'm just trying to figure out when to take a break. I assume you have a number of questions. We're not going to get done before noon, right?
No, I do, and this might not be a bad break.
So I'm just wondering if there's a good point to break here, and if you could suggest one, I'd be happy to take your suggestion.
This would be just fine.
Okay.
Right now.
What time would the commissioners like to come back? It's 11:45, so would you like to come back at 1?
There are actually some other meetings that the commissioners have been asked by administrative staff to participate in over lunch hour.
Oh,
and
okay.
So if we could get a slightly longer break, I think that would allow us to get food and do some of the other business of the commission.
So, just suggest something.
Ideally, an hour and a half break would be.
And would you want a break now, or would you rather go to?
I would like a break now, and then perhaps come back at 15 or 20 after.
Okay. We'll be back then. 1:15, 1:20. Thanks. Well,